We'll begin the March 20th, 2009 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Rain Report. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN. Scarcely a week doesn't go by that there isn't an MCOM, emergency communications exercise, or other activity involving MCOM folks, both within and without the amateur radio service. A serious issue among MCOM groups is the lack of standardized certification other than for first responders through the United States federal government, and that requires a lot of paperwork. No surprise there. One group attempting to standardize certification is NRCEV, the National Registry of Certified MCOM Volunteers. Its co-founder and executive director is Chris Snyder, NG3F. Chris spoke with Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, about the evolution and goals for this organization.
We established the NRCEV to serve as a national MCOM volunteer certification organization to promote and provide a valid, uniform process to assess the knowledge and skills required for competent practice required by amateur radio and other MCOM volunteers, and maintain a public registry of individual operators and communication support teams. Basically, the NRC was established to be an independent certifying organization for emergency communications volunteers. And we are organized into two boards, a board of directors and a certification board. The board of directors oversees the overall policy and direction of the organization, as well as the day-to-day operations. The certification board, which is independent of the board of directors, it oversees the certification and qualification programs, the certification requirements, the eligibility requirements, the process for validating those requirements, and any fees associated with that. It's important that the boards are independent. That's to help ensure that any, quote, business issues don't influence the requirements and processes, those kinds of things for certification, so that they stay independent. We are incorporated as a nonprofit organization in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, but we haven't yet obtained our 501c3 status from the Internal Revenue Service, but we do plan to do that, especially after September 11th and the hurricanes in 2005, including Katrina and Rita. There was a lot of discussion amongst hams on the different discussion groups and one-on-one and those kinds of things of some kind of need for a standard or a common training standard across the nation, because they vary widely, not just across the nation from state to state, but within a state, from county to county, from organization to organization. They range from organizations that require nothing more than an amateur radio operator license to register with the organization, to organizations that have very laid out, very definite, and very stringent training requirements. They run the gambit. And there's been a lot of discussions on that. What should that standard be? Being involved in that area, having come from first responder field as a paramedic, as a veteran ex-military, working in the emergency management field as well as emergency communications, saw that there really was a need for something common out there, something on lines and on par with what was being done in the traditional first responder fields. Maybe not to the same level, but at least comparable. And also saw a certification as being able to elevate us as amateurs for that sort of professionalism that we've been searching from our counterparts in those areas for a long time. And by doing a certification, similar type of process, similar types of means, same kind of general requirements they have, especially like an ICS, things like that, would help move us along in those areas. Additionally, the Department of Homeland Security through FEMA and the National Integration Center, based upon some presidential directives, Homeland Security presidential directives, was required to develop and implement a national incident management system, which they ended up calling just that, NIMS, which established a common set of procedures, policy, and principles that would be used universally across the United States to manage incidents. And almost all, if not all, states have followed suit in one way or another through a governor's proclamation, executive order, through legislation, has required that the incident command system and the national incident management system be utilized in all incidents. So part of our participation in those incidents is our requirements to utilize those systems as well. As part of that ongoing process, the National Integration Center, part of the Department of Homeland Security, has issued some different documents over the last number of years. One was, they call it NIMS Guide, which set out some guidelines for emergency responder credentialing. And I use the term emergency responder as that's what the federal government uses for anyone that responds to an incident, and specifically the large-scale complex incidents such as Katrina, Hurricane Andrew, earthquakes, things like that that require resources mostly from across state lines and also federal assistance. They don't just limit this to the traditional first responders of fire, emergency medical services, or law enforcement. It's across the board. Part of that definition for emergency responders is those that have special unique skills. Specific example they use are equipment operators. Amateurs definitely fall into that, not necessarily as equipment operators, but a special skill. The fact that amateurs having an FCC license, the common operating procedures that we've developed over the decades, creates a special skill that we have. Some additional things that have come out from the federal government are the NIMS 5-year training plan. And recently, last fall, they published a draft version for comment on credentialing system for personnel. Both of these assume and will require not just a training standard that you've attended certain courses, but also a position qualification component, which means that you've actually demonstrated in front of somebody that you can actually perform the skills you learned in those classroom settings. So the NRCEV, its goal is to target primarily those volunteers that would want to and need to respond across state lines and be active and participate in these large incidents where these credentialing and training requirements would be required to be utilized. They could be utilized at the local level as well, but that is not our primary target audience. Credentialing, you hear that word a lot nowadays. There's really two components to that. The first component is the credential, the card that you carry that is issued to you, and it identifies you as the person you are. There's usually a background check involved with that, at least the basic check. And the other component of that is that on that credential, it identifies what you are qualified to do. You're an EMT, you're a firefighter one, you're an amateur radio voice operator or something like that. Whatever that qualification is also part of that credential. And credentialing has been delegated to the state and local government authorities. So that's where the actual credentialing will occur, the issuing of the cards and that process. Part of the other thing that Department of Homeland Security is working on that we've included within our certifications is what's called resource typing, which is the identification of equipment and personnel, and it outlines specific capabilities and or skills that either the equipment or personnel or a team has. This way, when an incident commander or somebody is requesting a resource, a good example would be a backhoe. When they do this, they use the resource typing and they ask for a type 1 backhoe. Type 1 automatically tells everybody exactly what capabilities, the size, how much dirt it can move, those kinds of things. And typically a type 1 resource has greater capability than a type 4 resource. This is also used a lot for teams. Part of our certification is also to certify teams. We've developed a resource typing on that very closely aligned with the Civil Air Patrol Communications Support Team, which has already been identified and published by the federal government. Keep it close to that so that the team site is manageable. It's in line with the type of resources that have already been approved by the federal government and those kinds of things.
You're listening to an interview with Chris Snyder, NG3F, co-founder and executive director of NRCEV, the National Registry of Certified MCOM Volunteers. Chris will continue talking about this organization in a moment. This is the RAIN Report, heard on the W3CSL Monessen, Pennsylvania, 2-meter repeater serving western PA on 147.225 MHz, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. We'll be right back.
We as an organization have had some contacts with the federal government, the National Integration Center. They recognize the importance of position qualifications and resource typing for amateur radio assets, and we'll be working to identify those and approve some set of those. There is also a system out there called the Emergency Management Assistance Compact. All 50 states belong to this. It is a system which allows them to easily request assistance from each other without having to go through the federal process, and has worked really well. This system has identified, although it's a very basic starting point, what they call a mission package. It's a basic capability that they would order for amateur radio resources. So the federal government and government entities recognize amateur radio as a resource. Part of our goal at the NRCV is to promote and help provide those mechanism and those tools that amateur radio operators and the organizations they belong to can meet the types of requirements that are coming down from the federal government, and trying to do it within amateur radio rather than have something imposed upon us from the outside in, which in most cases would not probably be a good fit. Some people wonder why the ARL has not started doing this. That would be the obvious choice. They don't appear to be working in that direction. They are working to establish a ARES database, which does have some training requirements as part of that, although there's no skill qualification or position qualification component to it, so it doesn't really rise to that level of a certification. Other than that, they probably have their own reasonings that they're not doing it. But something I think a lot of people may not think about, while the ARL may be an obvious choice because they are the granddaddy of amateur radio organizations in the United States. They do a lot of these things. They're participating in a lot of areas. They sponsor the ARES program. But just because they are our national representative, they have name recognition, does not mean that they necessarily have or are able to obtain the resources, whether that's people or money, to actively pursue all the different areas and issues that amateur radio faces. The National Registry are saying, hey, here's one niche area in amateur radio that we've got background in. We've got the links with emergency management, understanding how the government works with things, field response background, experience with emergency communications, to bring those parts together and be able to provide this service in this niche area. The certifications themselves won't give you authorization to work anywhere. What they will do is provide information that those that use amateur radio operators and resources, they know that if somebody is certified at one of our levels, they know what that baseline level is, the training they've had, and where they come from. I know a lot had happened during Katrina that I saw through email reflectors and things like that. There was massive amounts of man hours spent in vetting volunteers that responded to determine whether or not their skill sets, their experience, just the equipment and maybe their physical condition, things like that, to determine whether or not they were appropriate to do what type of jobs or tasks they needed to perform. One of the things a certification will do will help in that process a good bit. You at least know a baseline of where somebody should be at. So people say, well, geez, we've taken the ARL courses, so we're certified at whatever level course we've taken. Unfortunately, that's a misunderstanding of the term certification, which is a very common thing. The federal government defines certification as a process by which a non-governmental organization grants recognition to an individual who has met predetermined qualification specified by that organization. Certification is a defined process, usually often voluntary, by which individuals have demonstrated the level of knowledge and skill required in the profession, occupation, role, or skill, and they're identified to the public or other stakeholders. So that there's really three parts to a true certification. It's a voluntary process, it's performed by a private organization, and for the purpose of providing for the public and others information on those who have successfully completed the certification process, which entails successful completion of educational requirements and demonstrating their ability to perform their skills competently. So there's the educational and skill qualification components to it. A lot of certifications that people hold or said to be certifications are misnomers, and only in the sense that they receive a certificate or are certified that they have completed a course of study. That's what a lot of certificate programs are at colleges and universities. It says you've completed a course of study, but to be a true certification, it needs to complete that skill qualification component as well. As far as I'm aware, we're the only organization that is attempting to do this specific kind of thing, trying to establish a baseline common training standard that's good nationally, that is not based upon what organization you're a membership with, who your served agencies are, or what part of the country you live in. It's something that's common across the board. It's the type of thing that most of the traditional, if not all the traditional first responders have had in place for years. It's similar to the certifications like in the medical field for EMTs, paramedics, nurses, doctors, their national board certifications, those kinds of things. Same type of concept.
You've just heard part one of Hap Holly's interview with Chris Snyder, NG3F, co-founder and executive director of the National Registry of Certified MCOM Volunteers, which is seeking national recognition for its Emergency Communications Volunteer Database Program. We'll bring you the conclusion of our look at the NRCEV next time. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990 through 2009 RAIN, all rights reserved. For RAIN's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9 SSN, bidding you all a very 73 from all of us at RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.